all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome to Taren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. No Facebook Live today. I'm Sterling Holmes live in studio. Daren Smith still doing it from his home studio. I don't know if I'm ever going to see Daren Smith again. For all I know, he's doing this from Cancun. Daren, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, but if only that were the case, I would love to be in Cancun right now. Obviously, the sun is out, not as much as I thought it'd be, and I thought the heat would be up a little bit, but it could always be worse. Could be snow and ice on the ground, so I'm thankful.
Yeah, honestly, it's very nice. I hope the snow and ice are behind us. I hope we're moving into the springtime. I know that the whole squirrel or the groundhog said we're going to have, what, 6 more weeks of winter? Dude, he's wrong.
6 weeks.
Yeah, he's wrong. Come on. That's blasphemy. I want it warm. Give me 65 and sunny. It's supposed to be 63 tomorrow. I think I'm going to shoot some hoops tomorrow. But we do have a lot of fun stuff to get into today. A lot of Royals baseball to get to, including some Whit Merrifield and some Chris Bubich audio. We do have some NBA talk to get into, including some All-Star snubs. And then we want to talk some KU and Baylor basketball. So all things considered, we have a very big show today. Daren, we talked a little bit to Jeffrey Flanagan about the Royals Hall of Fame and how he typically goes for longevity over the highest peak, but some guys like Carlos Beltran may not have had the longest longevity within a Royals uniform, but his peak was just so high it's hard to ignore. Of the Royals players who are nominated for the Royals Hall of Fame, Johnny Damon, Beltran, Jeremy Guthrie, Yordano Ventura, Billy Butler, and Luke Hochaver, which ones to you make it in?
Well, it depends how many am I allowed to put in there.
You can get as many as you want. There's actually no limit on how many you can vote for.
Man, you put me in a tough spot. Look, sentimentally, I would put Yordano in there. I mean, I think he did well, you know, with his time here. Obviously, the playoff and World Series run that he contributed to the team, I think that's vital. I mean, Carlos Beltran, yeah, but I like Johnny Damon. I like Johnny Damon as well. I know he hasn't gotten in two previous times, but I think now is a good time as ever for him to get into the Royals Hall of Fame. I mean, I think it's the only Hall of Fame he'll get into, minus his high school. But yeah, I think he'd be well deserving.
Yeah, this was really tough because to me the only one that really jumps out was actually Billy Butler. I thought Billy Butler was the name that jumped out to me that's deserving for the Royals Hall of Fame. And the reason why was he was with the Royals organization almost his entire career. He was the face of the franchise for multiple years. He was the guy that fans and the team looked towards for guidance. And I think Billy Butler is that guy who deserves to be in the Royals Hall of Fame. I think Carlos Beltran makes it in just for his high peak. I agree. His longevity is not nearly as long as a lot of players who play in the Royals organization, but his peak was so high. I think it's hard-pressed to not put Carlos Beltran in. I think Johnny Damon just misses the cut. I think he's underneath Carlos Beltran when it comes to the longevity and peak combination, so I think Damon's just out. I think Jeremy Guthrie, Luke Hochaver, I appreciate what you've done for the Royals organizations, especially since Jeremy Guthrie's last name is my middle name, but I just can't see any of those guys getting in. And then Yordano Ventura. I think there needs to be a way to get him in. I don't know if you do the Chiefs method with what was it, Mac Hill Lee? You know what I'm talking about? How they have.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'd be okay if they gave him an honorary admittance into the Royals Hall of Fame. Because to me, that's what I think makes the most sense.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, his death is obviously not of his own doing. So, you know, I can see sentimentally he was a fan favorite. He did well. Again, he did well while he was here. And the fact that, you know, his life was cut short from a tragic car accident. Look, if well, the Royals can do whatever they want to do at the end of the day. So if that's something that they want to do, like they did Mac Lee, who got in after his rookie season, you know, of course he fell ill when he passed away. So I could see a scenario where the Royals could do something like that for Ventura, because one, you know, the there's not a lot of crowd out there, and I know they're talking about having attendance out there, but that would be something that I think the fans would buy into.
So when it comes down to it, are you out or in on Billy Butler making it into the Royals Hall of Fame?
Ugh. How many times has he been back to Kansas City?
He seemed to like the organization. I know he had some run-ins with his teammates, and there's obviously some stuff under the radar with him where there's reports of him not being the best dude when it came to some of his teammates. But at the end of the day, he was the face of the franchise for how many years? You know, he was that guy. He was the Mike Sweeney, you know, post-Mike Sweeney.
You know, while he was with the Royals, I mean, what he was an All-Star once. What he won the Silver Slugger Award, I believe. I think he won the same year he was voted to the All-Star. I mean, face of the league, yes. I mean, he left right after, you know, they lost the World Series. Of course, the following year the team won it without him. I mean, there's a case to be made, but did he? You know, 147 home runs. Did he really contribute that much to the Royals' success, minus 2014?
Again, though, he and I'm also a fan of.
I'm asking.
No, I 100% agree, because he toiled on some very bad teams. Being the best player on a bad team doesn't automatically make you some superstar. A lot of times, like we saw with, say, David DeJesus, you're probably an above-average player who's on a bad team, and by being the only above-average player, it makes you look like a superstar. I understand that, and I think they have maybe the same qualities of David DeJesus and Billy Butler, where, of course, they're not sniffing anywhere near any major awards, but what they were in Kansas City, you know, it's so hard to put a price tag on it, so tough to put a number on it. Just to me, I would have zero problem if Billy Butler got in.
Look, not that I have a problem with it, but it's like you said, being the best player on a bad team, again, I would pose the question, how bad was the team? Because if you were that good, what did you do to help contribute to the team's success?
Oh, now, again, you had baseball. It's different.
Look, every team, every player got to hit the ball. I mean, you got to catch the ball. I mean, look, they're – man, you put me in a tough position trying to tell somebody who's not a Hall of Fame player. But again, you know, I also got to look at wins and losses and what you did for the team. I mean, because like you said, I mean, being the best player on a bad team doesn't necessarily mean you need to be a Hall of Famer, even a team Hall of Famer. You just happen to be the best player on that particular worst team.
No, and I agree. The reason why I typically, when it comes to baseball, I don't ever hold team record against guys. Look at, for example, Mike Trout. We know Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. He's not winning any playoff games. I'm not holding that against Mike Trout. He has 8 dudes he needs to count on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And not only that, you have to count on pitchers, which he's had none of them. So I don't ever hold, as far as baseball terms, wins and losses against a single player as much as I would, say, football if you're a quarterback. If you're a quarterback in the NFL, then yeah, I'm going to hold wins and losses against you a lot more than I would a first baseman on a baseball team. That's just how I value these types of things.
Then for that stone alone, fine, Billy Butler's a Hall of Famer, a Royals Hall of Famer.
Well, yeah, he's not sniffing, though.
If we're going... Yeah, so you know, I mean, if we're going to go by that metric, and I don't have a problem going by that metric, that's fine. Yeah, he's deserving to be in, and plus, you know, obviously he started his career out with the Royals, so you obviously kind of want to end it there as well. So I could see a scenario, and he did contribute to the team's success in getting to the World Series. So yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
So, moving forward, now that we've gotten past the tough Royals Hall of Fame question, which I'm still excited to see Flanagan's answers on this, Whit Merrifield had some very strong opinions during his Zoom call yesterday, and I think he brings up some very good points, especially when it comes to teams who maybe aren't trying. They're not bringing in the best players. They're doing these rebuilds. And Whit Merrifield had to say this about the Royals trying to actually get better and win this year.
Wait, touching off what you were talking about earlier, about the expectation to win and make the playoffs, how would you describe the culture in Kansas City from the front office down? Because I think from a national perspective, some people were a little surprised they went out and they got Santana and Minor and Benintendi, because a lot of teams, you know, retreat and stay down for a while. What is it about the Royals that they're kind of an exception to that?
Well, that's a problem that people were surprised that we did that. Everybody should do that. Everybody should go out every year and do what they can to make their team the best they can. And our ownership and our front office understands that. And we're very fortunate here to have a front office ownership that understand that this is a very small window. Players get to play in the big leagues. Coaches get to be here. You got really one shot at it. Why not go out every year and put together the best team you can to be successful? Obviously, teams are going to have their budgets or whatever you want to call it, but there's no reason to not go out and try to win every year. And the fact that people were surprised that we're doing that is a problem, and we hopefully that can get resolved.
So, Darren, what do you make of those comments from Whit Merrifield?
Well, okay, so let me go back and let me ask you, how do you think I should feel? Because I wonder who's been talking about them being playoff ready a year early. And well, everybody's like, no, I'm just saying, because look, Whit seems to be on the same side as I'm on. So I have no problem with what he said, because, again, every team should be trying to make the moves and do what's necessary to try to put themselves in a position to get to the playoffs. And that's what I think that's what he's saying to me. That's what I'm getting from it.
So, of course, he's going to say that, because no player is going to go into a season saying their team's terrible. They're not going to say that.
I think he believes it, and James Harden did do that, by the way.
Well, no. I do agree that this team is trending in the right direction. If they made the playoffs, it wouldn't be a massive surprise. I just think more things have to go right than go wrong for that to happen. What I took away, though, is he's calling shots at a lot of teams. For example, say the Colorado Rockies, the Pittsburgh Pirates, a lot of these teams who are trading away all of their assets. They're not trying to win this year, that it didn't try to win last year. They're sitting here, and the Royals kind of went through periods like this as well, where you're trying to hoard draft picks and you don't care if you lose 100 plus games a season. And what he's saying is that's not fair to the players. It's not fair to the coaches. You only have a finite amount of time in the majors. You need to go out and not waste these players and coaches' careers. Coaches get fired over this stuff and then may never get another chance to coach in the majors again. That's not fair to the coaches. And so I like what he said. I understand teams' perspectives of where it's really tough if you don't get high draft picks year in and year out to eventually turn around on a full-on rebuild. But at the same time, bringing in guys like Benintendi, Carlos Santana, Mike Minor didn't cost you a ton of money, and it automatically makes you better this year. I think Whit Merrifield has the right mindset.
Well, no, I mean, again, I don't disagree with him, because I feel the same way he does. And, you know, to your point where you feel like they have to say it, or no, they don't have to say that. I mean, you know, he truly believes it. I mean, as I've talked the last couple of weeks, if you look at their roster from 1 through 9, at least in the starting lineup, I mean, that's a playoff type of, you know, at least from what we've seen here with some of the players and, of course, the names that they've brought in and the pitching staff. I mean, this is a playoff starting lineup with the Royals. Obviously, you're looking at 162 games and what they can do, injuries and things of that nature. But no, I mean, I believe exactly what he's saying. Obviously, you know, I'm not too concerned with what Colorado or Pittsburgh or those teams do with their organization. That's, you know, that's how they handle their business. But the Royals being a small market team, got a new owner who came in last year, and all the stuff that they're looking to do and that he's looking to do, he's not afraid to invest his money. There is no salary cap in baseball. So, you know, he can dig deep in his pockets if he wants to pay who he wants to come here to play for Kansas City and make the numbers work. I mean, and look, what you're trying to do as an owner, because he's been in this business for a long time. He was in Cleveland, so he knows how it's, you know, he knows what it's like to try to build a contending team. And you know, that's what he wants to do in Kansas City. I mean, he wants to make sure that his money is well invested, and by doing that, he's getting a product, and he believes, and we all believe that Mike Matheny, you know, is the right manager for the job. And, you know, now it's up to the players to, you know, to back up the things that are Whit's saying and that Mike Matheny is out there putting out there for them to do. And so if the players can stay healthy, and, you know, they just, as, you know, as we like to talk about, as long as they just do their job, you know, we could possibly see just how well this team does.
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark for me is what 8 and 9 is going to be in the lineup. You have your 1 through 7. Even if there are a couple question marks 1 through 7 as far as Soler, Perez, and Dozier's health concerns, and then as far as can Mondesi do it for an entire season and not just on these 1 month or 2 month spurts, Nicky Lopez and Michael Taylor, to me, are going to be the biggest question marks. They need to be at least average. We need Nicky Lopez to at least hit some doubles down the line. We don't need him to hit some bombs. We need him to hit some doubles down the line, get a 330, 340 on base percentage, and not be a complete black hole at the bottom of the lineup. I think that, to me, is going to be the biggest question mark of if the Royals can or cannot make the playoffs this year, is what happens with 8 and 9.
You're correct, because even though I said 1 through 9, 8 and 9 is the one that I was always concerned about. You know, I think when it's all said and done, no Sterling, that we're going to be very surprised with how the Royals finish. I don't think that they're going to be in last place.
No.
Of course, today is February 26th, so somebody might try to come back and pull this audio if that happens. But, you know, I think the Royals, man, just with the lineup and the talent alone, minus season and an injury, I don't see them finish less than third, if not second. You know, again, I think, you know, the best we hope for, obviously, is that they win and that they, become either a wild card team or they somehow look up and, you know, overtake Detroit and Minnesota and win, you know, and win the division. But, I like the way this looks. Now, 8 and 9, obviously, like you said, is questionable. We'll have to see but you got to remember, if I remember correctly, Dayton Moore has said that they still have money to play with. I think he said he still got about $5-10 million if he wants to bring someone else in. So I still don't think that they're through, with the messing with this lineup and bringing some talent in.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that they finished third. I think the White Sox have so much depth and so much young talent. I'm going to go with the White Sox finishing first in the AL Central. Twins will probably finish second based on their bats alone. Their pitching isn't great. They have Jose Barreas at the top of the pitching rotation, who's been very good. Kenta Maeda needs to bounce back. Their bats are so strong, though, in Minnesota. I think that'll make up for their lack of pitching. And then I think the Royals finished third. I think they do beat Cleveland. I think Cleveland traded away too many of their assets. I think Whit Merrifield actually may have been alluding to what Cleveland has been doing when he was talking about how teams aren't necessarily trying to get better. They're just trying to basically not piss fans off. They're trying to just skate skate the line. I think it's what Cleveland has been trying to do. And then I think Detroit still 3-4 years away from being in any sort of contention. I think the Royals finished third, and if the Royals finished third in this division, I think that would be considered a success, especially if you win anywhere from, say, 75 to 84 games. Around that margin, I would be very happy.
No, I mean, obviously that's fair if they finish that high. The expectations that we have, look, the expectations that are here in Kansas City is obviously we just don't want them having 100 losses. I think anything above that, you know, we'll be satisfied with, especially not being able to attend games. I do believe that now fans will be able to attend. I'm not sure if it's going to be 5,000 or more, what the final number is going to be to start the season off. But, Kansas City Royals fans are simple. Put out a good product. Don't embarrass us. Don't have 100 losses. I think if the Royals can just, you know, do that part, I think this year will be pretty good. And look, I mean, they're going to field a team that fans are going to want to come out. Look, this is a lineup, 1 through 7, but 1 through 9, that you're going to want to pay money to see. Now, obviously, with COVID, you know, we'll be able to watch it on television and whatnot. But if you want to spend money and utilize it properly, then that's what you would do.
I'm with you. This is going to be a fun team to watch. And they have, I think this Royals team has a lot of interesting pieces, obviously with Mondesi and Benintendi first coming to mind, but you still have Salvador Perez, who last year was the best hitting catcher when healthy in the majors by far. You have so much young pitching, which is super exciting. Your bullpen is actually very good. This team, I think, has so many interesting storylines to watch. Even if they're only average, I think Royals fans are going to be extremely excited and happy.
Well, considering, well, I would say it depends on how much these tickets are going to be, too, for fans to come out and to attend.
True.
Let me put that out there first, because I'm always a man of the people, no matter how rich you are, Stellan. this is going to be a great season. I'm with you on that. I think at the end of the day, what's going to matter is the product that Mike Matheny puts out there. Now, I will say this, you know, we got a chance to see Mike Matheny, you know, in the 60-game realm. And, of course, he's coming from St. Louis. Let's see how he does, you know, managing this team over 462 games. I mean, because, you know, look, we're talking about the players. But there's a little bit of pressure on Mike Matheny because, you know, we want to see what he can do with this, you know, with this roster of 1-9 in the starting lineup. I mean, in the starting lineup. So how will he be able to manage, you know, egos and the players and the lineups and stuff throughout this season? That's what I'm interested to see as well.
Yeah, I'm with you there because Mike Matheny, first off, changed. I owe him a huge apology if I ever see him because I was very upset when he was first signed. I was not a fan of the signing. I go, this might be – I mean, all the fans were saying, don't hire this one dude, and then the Royals went out and hired that one dude. Well, guess what? That one dude had a hell of a first, you know, season with the Royals. Even if it was only 60 games, it was a great start. He did everything the right way, said the right things. So for that, Mike Matheny for sure deserves an apology and this second chance that the Royals have given him. One storyline I want to see him make is if Danny Duffy struggles as a starter and there's a young guy who needs to get called up, who's lighting it up in the minors, if he gets called up, will Danny Duffy get moved to the bullpen? Because I want to see Danny Duffy in the bullpen because I personally think his stuff will play better as a like, almost like Luke Hochaver. When Hochaver moved to the bullpen, it was a complete 180. If Danny Duffy moves to the bullpen, I think his stuff plays better. I think he becomes that lockdown guy. They don't have a lefty in the bullpen currently. To me, all the signs point to Duffy being a bullpen piece, yet I think he's going to start this season as a starter. So I want to see if Mike Matheny makes that change. No,
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I just think that Danny Duffy is someone who's had some injury concerns in the past. He's someone who's been wild. He has obviously some great starts here and there, but I think his stuff just plays up better if he was in a bullpen role. Just to me, wouldn't that make sense at least trying him out there?
No, that's a good question. I think he's earned the opportunity to, you know, to start and be in that rotation. Yeah, you know, I would say wait and see how the season progresses. If I'm correct, is he left-handed or right-handed? He's left-handed, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I think you put him in that rotation, depending on the lineup and who you're going to be facing, you know, whether or not he stays there. But as the season progresses, I'm with you. You know, you can look and see. To me, if I'm Danny Duffy, I'm open-minded. You want to do whatever you can to help the team win. And so if that means starting rotation, cool. If it means, you know, in the middle of the innings, hey, so be it. If it means even trying to be in a relief role, so be it. I don't have a problem with it. I think when you have options in the manner in which the Royals do, I think that gives you more latitude to make those type of changes or to try to fix. I don't even want to say fix, but to try to that's what I'm looking for. If you you can kind of finagle things around, move things around, and see what puzzle pieces fits. That's all I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the Royals do have a ton of depth, especially young depth when it comes to starting pitching. One of the young starting pitchers, though, talked today at spring training. Here's what Chris Bubich had to say about his growth and about following the leaders and veterans on this team.
What are the kind of questions you're asking teammates in this year's camp? Now that I would imagine last year, you know, not that you weren't tiptoeing around, but you're learning your surroundings. How much more aggressive are you with the questions you're asking?
Yeah, it's a good question. So in terms of players, I mean, you ask a guy like Greg Holland or guys that have, or Mike Minor, the guys that have been around, kind of how they view pitching, let's say in different counts. Let's say, for example, obviously Greg's known for his slider, his strike slider versus his two strike slider, stuff like that. Just kind of getting tidbits there. I'm not there quite with the breaking ball yet, as some of those guys, but, and I'm also more open to the coaching staff as well this year. Not that I wasn't last year, but I'm willing to bounce more off of them. They've been really open-minded with everything that I kind of bring to the table, and I really admire that. So there's no holding back in terms of questions or stuff that's anything that's on my mind. I feel free to ask at any time.
So, Darren, with Chris Bubich coming out and basically saying he's more comfortable this year, basically saying, not that he wasn't last year, but now it's a full season, he has some time with the guys, he feels more comfortable asking questions about maybe how do you hold your slider, what should I throw in this position, how much of an advantage does that give having some veterans, like he even mentioned, Greg Holland and Mike Minor on this team to give guidance to these young guys?
Well, first of all, I mean, it lets me know that he's a little wise beyond his years, because he's willing to, one, suppress his ego and take that advice and constructive criticism from his, you know, from his colleagues. You know, I do also like the fact that even though he said, you know, he's able to take the coach, and, you know, I like how he cleaned it up immediately, and it's not like I couldn't last year. So, you know, he's saying all the right things, and you know, and look, it's going to be important for his growth and development as well as a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. You know, he was, what, 1-6 last year, starting 10 games. I mean, the only way that you're going to make it in this business is by being humble and also learning, you know, learning from those who've been here before you. So I think he's, you know, I think he's on the right track. Obviously, I believe he said all the right things. And so, you know, we just got to see, you know, once again, how he performs when it's his opportunity to.
Yeah. He's one of those guys I'm very interested to see. I don't know if he got called up too early last year, but he was obviously thrown into the fire, and he had some decent outings, but a lot of it was a mixed bag, focusing probably on the negatives. I think there's a lot of talent still left in him, and I like the bringing in of Mike Minor, not only because Mike Minor's a good pitcher who will be maybe the best starting pitcher on this rotation to start the year. They're both lefties, and having a veteran lefty to learn from when it comes to what to throw and how to have some mound presence, I think will help translate to these young guys. Having someone you can watch from the same side, as silly as it may sound, it's truly helpful. I'm a lefty golfer. For example, it helps me when I watch other lefty golfers. It just does. I don't know if it's a similar example, if you have one of those, Darren, but like as a lefty golfer, watching other lefty golfers makes more sense. I bat lefty in baseball. Watching lefty bats makes more sense to me. Having a lefty pitcher to me, a veteran, makes more sense as far as having a young lefty to teach him. That, to me, all flows as far as my mindset.
I can't lie, Sheller. That actually made a lot of sense. I was sitting there thinking, you know, one thing I used to try to throw the ball left-handed when I played football. You know, obviously because I'm right-handed, I used to always try to make myself ambidextrous, and I really couldn't. So no, I get where you come from because that does make a lot of sense. So no, again, like we said, he's to me he's wise beyond his years, and you know, the Royals might have some, you know, might have a gem on their hands.
Well, Darren, we do have to take a quick break, but I know you're excited because when we come back, we stop talking baseball and we talk NBA.
First of all, I love baseball, but yeah, I can't wait to talk some basketball.
I know. You've been getting on my case, and I feel bad. We need to talk some NBA, so we'll do all that and more when we come back. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
It's all good, baby. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and heavy tea.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. No Facebook Live today. Darren, it's time, baby. It's NBA time. The All-Stars got announced. Some big names, some big snubs. Where do you want to go first with this? With the NBA All-Star voting, where do you want to go? Do you want to go with the snubs first? You want to go with the rosters? Who do you think has the biggest impact? Who had the best case?
Well, I'll be honest. The most shocking thing was, of course, I can't remember if they I guess they led the respective vote getters, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, but the fact that they weren't able to, like they've done the last couple of years, pick their rosters or pick their starting lineup, you know, that they've done, yeah. I'm kind of disappointed in that because I think that was, you know, that was something that fans actually look forward to, obviously, because, you know, LeBron was always trying to take either the biggest or try to take KD on his team, pick him first before anybody else, and the simple fact that now he's on the opposite side and on the Eastern Conference, I guess he couldn't do that. So that was disappointing, to say the least. But looking at the starting lineup, you know, I guess I would pose the question to you is, who do you think has a better starting lineup, the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference?
That's a really good question. Maybe I would say the Eastern
has the tallest now. Yeah. The Eastern Conference, they have the tallest, yeah.
They're two differently constructed teams. The Eastern Conference is a lot of guys that need the ball in their hands, a lot of me-first guys that you build your team around. The Western Conference, like with Luka and Nikola Jokic and Stephen Curry and LeBron James, both those guys, or all four of those guys, can play a little bit off-ball, or they can be playmakers. You know, Kawhi, I wouldn't necessarily say is a playmaker, but the other four guys, I would say, are playmakers. On the West, you know, KD, Giannis, Bradley Beal, Joel, and then you could maybe say Kyrie. Those guys are more me first type of scorers. Yeah, they're very different.
I disagree. I mean, I disagree, because Giannis and Joel, obviously, you know, they can play with their backs to the basket, and yes, someone has to get them the ball. Now, granted, they do, you know, everybody tries to live out their dream of being a point guard or whatever. So, you know, but. You know, they would get down on the block. Kevin Durant doesn't have to have the ball in his hands because he's so high efficient that, you know, he's not ball dominant. Obviously, Kyrie Irving is more of a shooting guard, mastering of the point guard. But now that you've seen James Harden with the Brooklyn Nets, you've seen what Kyrie can do off the ball. So depending on how the game starts, I think Kyrie Irving will start off playing point, and I think he would not have any problem trying to get other players involved before he start getting his shots.
In fairness, it's not like these games are ever the most high-intensity games to begin with. Just to me, what's kind of funny
is...
last 5 minutes, then the players actually try, to an extent. The Eastern Conference, though, not a single starter averages over 6 assists a game. On the Western Conference, 4 of the 5 starters, the exclusion being Kawhi, all average 6 assists or more per game, and 3 of them average 8 or more per game. That's why I said on the Western Conference, there's going to be a lot of good ball movement.
No, it's going to be good. I mean, now if you're on the Western side, you know, it might be more of a hot potato because everybody's trying to get everybody else involved, and they're trying to, you know, see who can take the best particular shot. I think Steph Curry is going to end up being the one in the point guard position, and Luka is going to be playing off the ball. You know, obviously Kawhi, the small forward, you know, he'll, you know, look, what's interesting is going to see who's going to play defense in that starting lineup, or if everybody just you know, because, yeah, look, look, you already know, obviously, they, you know, a lot of the star players act like they don't want to play. Playing the All-Star because, you know, it's taking time away from them and what they're able to do. But I like this opportunity. I mean, this is what – and look, this record stuff. This is the 17th All-Star selection for LeBron. This is the 11th for Kevin Durant. So, you know, these are obviously the veterans of the squad and stuff like that. So I like it. Obviously, this is number 7 for Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving. So, you know, those four right there, I'm looking to see big things from them. Looking at the reserve side, are you surprised? Well, going back to starting up, are you surprised who ended up getting the starting 9 versus those who were on the reserves?
Actually, no. I think the starting lineups on both East and West were the exact starting lineups that I would have probably picked. I think the starting lineups on both sides were very fair, and I have absolutely zero problems with them. What about you?
I probably would have had now. Only because he switched conferences, but I wouldn't have had a problem if James Harden would have been in the starting lineup. I wouldn't have had a problem with that, either over Kyrie or over Bradley Beal. I wouldn't have had a problem with that. On the Western side, I'd probably say Dame Lillard maybe.
Yeah. I should know who you take out though.
but who do you put him in over? Yeah, because you know, because he's a guard. I mean, I can't, you know, look, I, you know, Luka and Steph Curry. I mean, they balling. So I mean, if anybody, I guess you could say, if anybody, it'd be Steph Curry. Now, if you're going positionless, and I would put him in ahead of Kawhi Leonard, but yeah. that's just me. But no, I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, Anthony Davis, he's going to be out, you know, because of the injury. And if I read correctly, I think Kevin Durant is out until the All-Star game, if not until after it. So we'll see how that goes. You know, obviously a lot of people talking about Donovan Mitchell because, you know, he's on the Utah Jazz and he's the best player on the best team. But again, you know, but you got Rudy Gobert who's also on that squad. I mean, look, there's a lot of good players. Ben Simmons, I don't know. I'm still kind of, you know.
Well, his defense has been. Ben Simmons may be leading the NBA for Defensive Player of the Year, so I think that's what gave him the big nod. His last couple weeks, he's been outstanding. He started off weak. I'm a huge Ben Simmons hater, but I have to give the man credit because his defense has been just it's been unbelievable. So I'll give him credit where credit's due. I think right now he would be my pick for Defensive Player of the Year.
I do like the fact that they acknowledge and they got Chris Paul on here along with Devin Booker. I think they're both deserving. And Zion Williamson, I think he is the youngest player that's on this deal here. So, yeah, I think he's the only second-year player that's on the squad. So, no, I mean, this should be a good All-Star game. And it's funny because I remember watching the Celtics last week and – it had dawned on me because I'm like, Jason Tatum's been in the league for what seems like 3 or 4 years, and it was like he's only 21 years old. I'm like, he's how old? You know, and yeah. I'm like, you know, because I'm like, because you know, he's been, because if I remember correctly, Kyrie was in Brooklyn last year, and now was he trade? No, he signed. So 2 years ago he was in Boston. Jason Tatum, that was the second year there because the year before when they made the Eastern Conference Finals. Against the Cleveland Cavaliers, he was a rookie that year, if I'm not mistaken. So this is his fourth year. And, oh my gosh, this boy's only so. Hold on, that still doesn't seem right or fair.
Yeah, yeah. No, do you want to know the one that always gets me is
one. Okay, no, he's 20. He's 22. He's 22. I'm sorry.
The one that always gets me is, do you know how old Andrew Wiggins is? Andrew Wiggins is 26, and he's played in the NBA for 7 seasons. He just turned 20.
Well, you know, that's
he turned 26 3 days ago.
Years.
He turned 26 3 days ago, so he's basically 25, or he turned 26 3 days ago, and this is his 7th year in the NBA. That one always gets me. Andrew Wiggins feels like he's been playing in the NBA forever, and he's only 26.
Well, look, to his credit, I think Joel Embiid is 26 as well. So, I, you know, and, but, I don't know. Well, no, because they both came into the league together. So they both been there, what, 4 years, right?
No. Maybe Embiid's only played 4 years because of injuries.
Yeah, they can't.
Embiid's maybe only played 4 years because of injuries.
Well, I don't
think. He sat out his first two.
Gosh.
Yeah, this is Andrew Wiggins' 7th okay. season in the NBA.
I feel. I did forget that the NBA, they don't, you know, they do allow you to red shirt and all this other stuff. So, yeah, that's, wow, it's been 7 years.
Yeah, that one always blows my mind. But
gosh, it has been 7 years.
Yeah, I know. Let that sink in. All you KU fans out there, let that sink in. This is Andrew Wiggins' 7th season. I still, that one never ceases to amaze me.
Well, yeah, but not only that, I mean, one, it makes you wonder where the time goes because his rookie year was when LeBron James left Miami to go back there and had him traded from Cleveland to Minnesota for Kevin Love. So, wow, and LeBron played 4 years in Cleveland and now the last 3 years in L.A. Man, where does the time go? My goodness, I feel old now that I think about it.
Yeah, I feel ancient now that I know that. Also, some of the snubs I wanted to talk about. We briefly talked about Devin Booker, but he finally got in because of Anthony Davis
AD,
being
yeah.
out. I thought Booker should have made it to begin with. And if we're going to play this game of who do you think should have made it, someone has to leave. I actually thought Booker should have made it over Chris Paul. That would have been my first one. I know they're teammates, but I would have rather have Booker over Chris Paul. What about you? Who were your snubs in the West?
Oh, I don't really have snubs more so than who might have been deserving, because when I look at the roster, I mean, everybody who's on it, I don't have a problem with them being on it. If anything, I guess if I want to be pessimistic, because they didn't, you know, because they haven't played a lot of the games this season because of injury, you know, I wouldn't have had a problem if Anthony Davis didn't make the team. I also, you know, may not have had a problem, you know, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. I know they would have made it just based off of stature, but they, this load management and sitting out games, I really don't like that, man. I really don't like it a lot. But I don't have any problems with the people that are on. I would like to have someone else from the Portland Trailblazers, whether it's Enes Kanter or someone like that, because, you know, while we're talking about Dame Lillard, you know, Enes Kanter at the center, man, you know, I mean, those are, you know, yeah, players. I see Rudy Gobert, you know, he averages a double-double with what he does, but Enes Kanter, you know, is pretty good at that position as well. Obviously, you can't, you know, you just can't have a team full of centers and stuff like that and big men, so... Someone is always, eventually going to get left out. But, yeah, those, you know, I think that, to me, I'm looking at players who normally don't make it, not those who do usually make it but just didn't get it this year. I like to see those who don't make it from time to time get rewarded, and I think Enes Kanter is one of them.
So, for me, in the Western Conference, the only one I could have said was Devin Booker, and he ended up making it. The only other guy I would have had a no problem if he would have made it was Mike Conley. Mike Conley's been the engine.
Utah, yeah.
He doesn't have great stats, and I'll be the first to admit his stats don't look like typical all-star stats, but what he has meant to the best team in the NBA, I think, cannot be understated. Again, I have no problem with him missing it, but I think that's one guy you can make a case for. Eastern Conference, I think there's three guys you can make a very strong case for. Jeremy Grant of the Detroit Pistons is the first guy that came to mind. Jeremy Grant is right now probably the front runner for most improved player this season, him or Jordan Clarkson, and Jeremy Grant's been phenomenal. You can make the case for Bam Adebayo and Domantas Sabonis. The guys I'd probably take out would be Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic. He's putting up awesome numbers, but he's getting big numbers on a very bad team. I think that can sometimes be – I guess Jeremy Grant's doing a similar situation, but that can be a little bit misleading. And then again, I wouldn't have cared if one of those guys made it over Ben Simmons. I get the defense, but sometimes I don't care. In an all-star game, I would like to see more fun players than guys who can't shoot outside of 6 feet.
The hate is real. Now, I guess the one other surprise is we see Zion Williamson on there, but – what about his other Brandon Ingram? Brandon Ingram, yeah, you know he could have easily made this All Star team over, you know, along with Zion Williamson. On the Eastern Conference side, look, I don't watch Nikola Vucevic, I don't watch Sabonis much. So you know those two players, I know with the Pacers and but he's averaging a double double. So I can't argue that. Well, you know, hey, he's putting in work down low, so. So I'm not going to hate on him about that. So, no, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't have a problem with this, you know, with this roster, you know, from top to bottom, starting lineup, as well as their reserves. I think, you know, I think for the most part, they got it right. And, you know, I like it. Look, and I always say, if you got a problem with it, play harder.
Yeah.
All out.
No, I think this is one of the best All-star votes we've seen, especially since Devin Booker got in. That was the only guy I thought was a legitimate snub. You can make the case for guys like Sabonis, who's averaging nearly 22, 12, and
Russell
6.
Russell Westbrook might feel like he's a snub.
Oh, come on. You know, he's no. He's been trash.
I said he might feel like he – I didn't say nothing about him being – I didn't say nothing. I said he might feel – you know, you can't tell me how that man might feel. I'm saying
that's
he might
true.
Feel like he should have made it. Because I'm like you, I don't think he played well, but he's averaging close to a triple double. So you know, I'm just saying, you know, he's playing. I guess he's playing bad. He's putting up numbers on a bad team, but yeah. So is Bradley Beal. So
yeah, but Bradley Beal is efficient, while Westbrook has been maybe one of the most inefficient players in the NBA. Just to me, that's not a – the comparison's off. Westbrook went from being he's still a fun player to watch, but he's just so inefficient. It's tough to see him ever make it on a very good team. With him being the number one or number two guy, it's going to be very tough to see him be a leader on a winning team. That's just my opinion.
Well, I will say this. The one player that I'm actually glad did not make it, especially after the way he played in the bubble last year, but then, you know, now he tried to turn up the last few games, but I thought he's been trash most of the season, is Jamal Murray for Denver. Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad he didn't make it. But look, you know, if you're someone like Michael Porter who feels like, you know, one, you should be starting and doing the things you should be doing, I mean, if this should be something that should motivate you. I mean, to want to make the All-Star team, and the fact that you can't, you know, because you're barely putting up a good performance, you know, with the Denver Nuggets, that's, you know, that's bad with itself. And I don't even want to talk about the ending to that game last night, where they, you know, where
brutal.
Four players, and look, Jamal, you know, and Jamal Murray. Whenever a shot doesn't go in, he's always doing the histrionics with the face and covering up his face. Like, dude, if you kept driving to the basket, they would have kept. Yeah, you know, he's so trash.
Man, you had a layup and you just
money back in the day.
Yeah, dude, that yeah, we won't even talk about that because that will take.
I mean, and then the guy. Yeah, but then the guy who shot the 3-point shot, like, who are you, like? For the win.
Yeah, for the win. You had a wide-open layup with three dudes standing on their basket, and you just jack up a three, and you're not – yeah, bad, brutal.
It's so frustrating.
Terrible way to lose money. I'm sorry, Darren. I feel bad for you. But we do have to take a quick break.
Oh, no, hold on. I didn't put no money in that game last night. It's because of Jamal Murray. I refuse to bet money on them.
I'm surprised. There's someone who actually Darren won't bet on. That should be a story in its own right.
I bet on Jokic, but I ain't betting on him.
We'll take a quick break. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Darren, big game on Saturday, Kansas and Baylor. How big is this game for KU?
I mean, it's big. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not going to overstate its importance. I don't think they're going to win, but you know, I mean, they're 11-6. Obviously, you know, for seeding purposes, if you're looking at the Big 12 tournament, you know, you want to be in a situation where if you have to face Baylor again, it's not going to be until the championship round. So, you know, obviously you want to try to do what you can in this particular game to try to, you know, at least try to win against them. You know, obviously they suffered an 8-point loss the last time these two teams played, but Baylor, just like Gonzaga, you know, they've been undefeated and unbeaten all season. So it's going to be a tough task. You know, it's not senior night. So if I'm Kansas, you know, I'm putting everything out there. I want to see how McCormick and how some of their best players perform, you know, with the spotlight on them. It's going to be national television, ESPN. Of course, we'll be playing it. We'll be playing the game over on our sister station, Sports Radio 18 WHB. So I can't wait to watch it, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is going to be a very exciting game. Baylor's been so good all season. Them and Gonzaga have been just 1-2. By far a cut above the rest. I think this is a big game.
I mean, I can't win no money on this game because Baylor, you know, Baylor's probably going to cover the points, and for me to bet them straight out, the odds would be too high on that. So too low on that. So
what's the spread right now? I'm not seeing it.
Let's see. Well, that's probably why, because it's it's going to be one of those situations. Let me see. Looking at it, that game is at 7:00. Baylor is there's no line on it just yet. It'll be out tomorrow morning, but yeah, no line yet.
Yeah, I saw. I was looking for it, but no. I think this is big for Kansas because if Kansas wins, they really help their seeding for the NCAA tournament. I think if you beat Baylor, who is clearly one of the two best teams in college basketball, that to me will give a massive boost to where their seeding will be. If they lose, pretty much no harm, no foul. I think if Kansas loses, no one's going to hold this against them. No one should. If they win, though, to me, this is the best situation for KU to be in. It's a win-win situation, and I think that's what you want to be in before you get in these final games before the tournament. That's the exact best situation to be in.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're in the tournament, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I know the NCAA, they said that they do plan on having a representative from each conference as long as COVID doesn't preclude any team, you know, conference from playing in. I think everybody's going to have at least one representative in the tournament this year.
So that is exciting. Well, Darren, it was a fun week. Hopefully you're back in the studio next week. We'll see. We'll see, right?
Quit acting like you miss your boy.
Hey, come on. I miss you, Darren. It's been like 3 weeks. I haven't seen you in person in like 3 weeks. I miss you, Darren. Well, as was Darren and Sterling.
I'll be there Monday, man. I'll make it happen.
That's what I love to hear. This was Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. Everyone have a great weekend. Stay safe. Have fun. We'll be back on Monday right here at 3 to 4 p.m.